Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, CEOs, founders and campaigners that are leading the healthcare revolution in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners will know, I am a CEO and founder of a health tech venture myself called PocDoc. PocDoc is leading the way in dramatically increasing access to vital cardiovascular screening, particularly in areas of health inequality and other hard to reach communities. We are extensively working across the NHS and pharmacies. And if you would like to find out any more information about PocDoc, please go to pocdoc.co. As ever at the top of the show, I want to say thank you to everyone listening live on the amazing UK Health Radio. Thank you to Johan and his production team for helping us produce this show. Similarly, if you are listening on any of the podcast channels, we are on all of them, basically. So thank you very much for downloading the show and for listening. Please remember to rate the show. It does really make a difference. If you're watching on YouTube or watching on Instagram, which is at Steve Roost, then brilliant. Thank you so much for having you. We're really, really pleased that each week now we're getting listeners from over 50 countries listening to the show, which is fantastic. Now, last week's show with Henry Stoneley was a really insightful show around how he and his team at Health have upended the traditional way to run a conference. One of the things that came up was that gender discrepancy in speakers, heavily weighted in favor of men, is predominantly due to the fact that within the conference circuit, businesses pay in 70 to 80% of times for the speaking slots. So it's heavily weighted in favor of men instead of women, because 96% of all venture funding goes to male-founded companies. Super interesting episode, ton of stuff that you won't have ever thought of. So I can recommend checking that one out. Now, on to today's show. Today's show is a very, very special show, and I'm very excited about it. It is an NHS menopause special, which is being put on in aid of Menopause Month. The show itself is the result of a collaboration with the incredible team at NHS Health Innovation York and Humber, very snappy title, including but not limited to the wonderful Noshina Kiani, Jess Hart, and Elsa Parker. So thank you to the entire team there for putting this show together. It's an honor to be able to play a very small part in raising awareness around menopause across the UK, particularly in Menopause Month. The NHS team in West Yorkshire are really leading from the front in terms of menopause awareness, particularly in areas of what's referred to as health inequality, where there is a discrepancy in access to care and services due to socioeconomic or demographic reasons. And they're activating for the entire month across the West Yorkshire region to raise awareness of menopause, fight misinformation, and support women in finding the right solution for them. It also happens to be cholesterol month, and cardiovascular disease, obviously being at the core of what PocDoc does, is very close to our heart. And actually, one of the things, one of the biggest myths that we've been trying to myth bust, as have West Yorkshire, is around this idea that cardiovascular disease is a predominantly male disease. Actually, cardiovascular disease kills more women over 50 than cancer. And it's actually the leading cause of death for women over 50. And as I said, it's cholesterol month. So here we are with a wonderful special, which is menopause and references to cholesterol and cardiovascular disease in one fantastic piece of content for you. To help me with this show, because it wouldn't be a very good show about menopause if it was just me talking about that, I have two wonderful guests. The first is one of the NHS's leading menopause specialists, Bukki Iyawade. And the second is well known across the UK as a design guru, TV presenter and writer, and menopause campaigner, Linda Barker. Hi, both of you. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Linda here. I'm very well, and it's an absolute privilege to be talking to you today, and Bookie alongside us. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Bookie here. It's a pleasure to be here. Lovely to meet you, Linda. Lovely to meet you, Steve.
Good. Right. Let's get started. So with two guests on, it always gets a little bit spicy is the wrong word, but it's good. Like, there'll be a good discussion because there's, yeah, exactly. That's right.
It'll be a bit of a vibe.
Bookie's moving her shoulders, which is, for those of you listening on radio, you won't see that, but it's a great little wiggle. And as I said before the show, when we were doing our show planning, in prep for the show, I have done a fair bit of prep, but particularly I've spoken to the two most important women in my life, my mother and my wife, perhaps depending on who I talk to, not necessarily in that order. So I feel like I've got a pretty decent handle on some of the issues. But where I wanted to start, because we are a broad church in terms of the show, we've got all kinds of different people listening. What I would thought we could do, Bookie, if it's okay with you, I would love you to start to just sort of lay the scene, and perhaps you could explain by walking us through the different stages of a woman's life and how and why menopause comes into the picture, when it does, why it does, what can influence that, and what that really means as far as a woman's life is concerned. And then we can take it on from there. Would that be okay?
Yeah, I could do that. So we start with menstruation. We have the fertile years, and then we progress from there to perimenopause to start off with, and menopause. That's to keep it simple, because I like simple. That's with a woman that's going through or coming up to the menopause naturally, because I mean, we just need to caveat that, because there are some women that don't have that natural life course. And, you know, we have some young women that experience menopause. So those three stages. And in terms of coming up to the menopause, I think it's just important. I know when we were doing the prep, one of the questions I asked, there was aspects around being aware, even young women being aware, just because their mothers, their teachers in school, yeah. You know, aunties, just knowing what is happening, broadening the conversation and not boxing it into that grey old woman or, you know, that box. We need to widen the conversation.
And do you feel like that there's enough sort of, this is probably the wrong phrase, so I'm going to apologise, but sort of like whole of life discussion and awareness with women about the whole of their reproductive life, if that's the right way to term it? I apologize if it isn't.
So at the moment, I would say that conversation is definitely increasing and it's widening. And even, I mean, previously we would discuss menopause in isolation. The conversation is moving to menstruation. It's moving to that whole women's health broader spectrum, definitely.
And is that because the awareness of the different processes, the biological processes, is increasing? Or did we sort of already always knew, and it was more of a societal change that has made this stuff being more aware of it and more explained and so on?
I think I don't have research to back me up, so don't know.
No, it's an opinion.
But I think that with the advent of different media to disseminate information, that's been helpful for people to come on and create awareness, different people. So it's not just limited right now to healthcare professionals. That can be a good and a bad thing.
We're going to come on to that, don't worry. That's on the show notes, don't worry.
Linda wants to step in. I'm sure she's coming with some nuggets.
Can I just kind of add to that conversation about awareness? Is because certainly when I mean, I'm lucky, I have three sisters, and I have two older sisters for this conversation. Certainly for me as a woman, and I would say I became perimenopausal in my kind of late 40s. It was probably about 48, to be honest. I wasn't really sure what was going on, because that conversation didn't happen with my mother or my aunties or, you know, or friends of my mother of that age group. It's something that they very much withheld, a bit like they put a brave face on so much stuff because, you know, that whole kind of environment was about, you know, put up and shut up. And I really sensed that was true in my mother's generation. So I didn't have that conversation with an adult. So it was bizarrely a bit of a shock for me, even though I'd been aware of my older sister coming for lunch one day. And she said, look, Lynn, I have to sit down here. I'm having a hot flush. And I literally went, what on earth is going on? And I watched this hot flush for the very, very first time. And then a couple of years later, she's 6 years, 6, 7 years older than me. I was then a little bit more prepared. I was a little bit more aware. But I think, I mean, I'm in my early 60s now. So I think it was still early days for awareness. And the conversation has started. It's a big conversation now. And I'm sure you agree, Bookie. There's a lot out there. And it's whether we are holding on to the right information, the wrong information. I think information and the conversation is great. A big conversation is great. And you have to find the nuggets that work for you.
I think so. On the topic of that, where do you stand, Bookie, on this idea that sort of more information is better versus a curated approach where information is somewhat vetted to assess its accuracy or applicability?
So more information is better. What's the quality of the information, to your point? I mean, I always say, you know, I would share credible resources that are evidence-based. And so what is important for women to recognize and understand is that not all information is equal. And so access your information from credible sources so that you are sure that you're getting, you know, what the evidence says. Because as much as, yes, lived experience is we're not disregarding lived experience, we also need to temper that with clinical evidence and, you know, data so that, you know, women get the best care that for themselves, and that will be different for each woman,
and different geographically as well. Sorry to no cut problem. In, Steve. Difficult geographically as well, because it could be that, you know, it takes a long time to get an appointment at your GP. Mm-hmm. It could be that you're at your wit's end and you find you have to go to somewhere privately for information. Mm-hmm. And so I find that, I mean, I've lived in London for a long time and I've recently moved up to Yorkshire full time. And I find information is different wherever I'm going. And it's hard work to kind of get the nuggets that work for you, the right information for you. So I think, you know, that conversation that we all have with our girlfriends, and Steve, you're right. I mean, men need to be in this conversation too. So that's great. The male's perspective is super important. And our young boys that we are educating in this world, our young men that we are bringing up, I think it should be taught in school, really, but from 16-year-old, all young men, women need to know this, and women coming through, 30-year-olds who are terrified of the menopause at the minute, we just need that kind of approach where information is dealt with kindness and with respect. And I think there is a lot of scaremongering, and I've been witness to that in the 10 years or so that I've been kind of an ambassador for a kind of a menopause, you know, a voice for the menopausal woman. And I've witnessed that, and I think that's tricky. And I feel it's getting better. It's a very noisy world out there, and absolutely, a bit like greenwashing, you know, we can find that companies are kind of wanting to hold on to a menopausal strap line because it's good business. And that's
it's like, if you're interested in targeting over 50s women, then align yourself to menopause is probably a pretty good bet.
Absolutely.
If I was being cynical.
It's not hard to be cynical. I see it all the time. And so, you know, awareness, it can be black and white.
I think what I was going to say, just to support Linda's statement, is the good thing now is that a lot of the information that I was referring to is actually sources, online sources.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, wherever you are in the world, wherever you are in the country, you could log on to a credible website and find this information that you need. And I mean, I'll allow you to or invite me to share the, yeah. those.
I will. We'll get them from you in a minute. I want to get through because I think that that's, I think it, like, I'm not sure if it was you or Linda that said it's a very noisy world out there, but it definitely is.
It is.
It must be very hard when you are either perimenopausal and you just don't know what's going on, or menopausal and suffering from all kinds of symptoms and you just want a solution. It must be quite easy to sort of land on something and believe in that thing, and then you're gone.
Or an influencer shares something, or, you know, yeah. Carry on, Linda. Please go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting because, I mean, you both are highly educated, and Bookie, you work in the NHS system, and you know it so well. And I think sometimes I might chat to women who are still unsure about the term perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... I think it's important to draw things back and keep things easier. And yes, we need to look at science for our kind of credible resources, but not forget that we need to also direct women to how they access that, because not a lot of women have the wherewithal, the time, the mm-hmm. inclination, or perhaps they're just so lost in a blanket of fog mm-hmm. that they really are struggling to know the route forward.
I think that's one area that I want to pick up with Bookie, with her NHS experience, which is around the path to diagnosis for mm-hmm. either perimenopause or menopause mm-hmm. within a GP framework.
Mm-hmm.
So I spoke to my mum about this, and she said that when she went through it, which is, mum, I'm sorry to, you know, I know you're listening, so I'm sorry to age you, apologies, but, you know, was well, 20 years ago, give or take. Mum,
uh-huh.
but you know, she she said, like, the idea of going to so we had at the time we lived in a village, and our village mm-hmm. was a man, and he was amazing, he was brilliant, classic family village doctor person,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
probably last of his breed.
Mm-hmm.
She said the idea of going to him was like an anathema, like to talk about menopause, it's like teaching like Hebrew to a lobster.
Oh, was, God.
You know what I mean? So obviously we've come a long way, right? And he was a great doctor, so it wasn't about his profession, but it was more like mm-hmm. a sort of cultural fit almost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about, like, what is the pathway to this sort of diagnosis type thing on the ground at GPs? And what's your take on how difficult that is for women? Okay.
So I hear mixed reviews. There are some brilliant GP practices, for example, that have, you know, they will have a menopause specialist in house, but if it might be in a particular area, not so much so. So I know and we are aware that the menopause coverage out there is not as it should be. That is why it is important for women to educate themselves, to have that awareness, you know, and get the information so that they, when they get out there to the GP, and, you know, you can advocate for yourself, at least know what's going on with your body, and also possibly ask for a referral. I know that the waiting lists are long, and so that's why we have the private.
Yeah, practice. Well, that's, I don't know, like, that's, I think, there aren't that, well, look, I've not completely done an exhaustive search, but it strikes me that by the time a woman might be going to her GP with symptoms, mm-hmm. they might be in a very difficult condition. And I wonder whether that then sort of prompts this drive across into the private sector. And I don't quite know, obviously, because I'm not on the inside, mm-hmm. how to solve that sort of almost accidental referral into private care.
So some of the things that are happening on the inside I can speak to are, do we need to stop?
No, don't worry. It's okay, keep going. Whenever we think something interesting, we can keep going. And then
some of the things we can speak to are obviously more training for a wider breadth of clinicians in primary care. So something like practice nurses, for example, we just literally just rolled out a toolkit. So that's one thing. Another thing we're looking to is speaking to having more pharmacists be involved in menopause care. And there are some brilliant pharmacists doing amazing work. Mm-hmm. Within GP land as well, we with in-house, we've come up with what we call an optimal pathway toolkit. Okay. And that is directed at non-menopause specialist clinicians, so primary care clinicians. It's been rolled out, it's been piloted, it's being evaluated at the moment. So I know that on the outside, it seems like nothing's happening. We also know that menopause is very high on the women's health strategy, you know, within women's health hubs and that kind of stuff. So on the outside, it might seem that nothing is happening in the NHS, but it is. It's just that these things take time, because everything that comes out of there has to be, you know, checked and fact-checked and cross-checked and validated. So those are the kinds of things that are happening around clinician education.
Okay. And it sounds from what you just said, and then Johan, I promise we'll go to the commercial breakup. Sorry, we'll definitely do it. It sounds like from what you're saying, there isn't really a debate anymore on the floor, so to speak, as to the importance of delivering this care. It's just the how of the delivering of the care.
And it permeating the service so that it goes out wider to more women.
Perfect.
In different communities.
Yeah, so that's another thing I think I want to come on to in the next part is this, Linda mentioned it, you mentioned it, is this discrepancy of place where depending upon where you might live, there might be discrepancies of access to this type of stuff. So, but we definitely have to stop for our first commercial break. So we will be back in 2 minutes for this menopause special with my guests, Bukki Ayoade and Linda Barker. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the second part of this week's Health Tech Hour with my guests, Bukki Ayoade and Linda Barker. So, Linda, I want to switch it back to you because you mentioned something at the top of the show about your journey into becoming a menopause campaigner and representing menopausal women. Can you walk us through what that journey was like and how you feel about your role in this space, if you like?
Well, I was incredibly honoured, really, to be asked to do this work, this kind of ambassadorial work. It was a long time ago now. It was before this conversation got as big as it has done today. And I do remember some people saying, "Oh, Linda, Are you sure you want to do that? Because that really puts you as a television presenter is directly into an age group.
Wow.
And it was at the time where, I mean, it sounds like I'm talking about the dark ages. And in lots of ways, it kind of was the dark ages, but it was about 12 years ago. Wow. But I was super happy to do that because for me, communication has always been key to getting answers. But speaking about the menopause is difficult. And this may seem weird to you, Steve and Bookie. Sometimes, as a presenter, you don't always have that conversation that you do like on screen, on the TV with your family and friends. I am quite a private person and I wasn't having those conversations. And I was aware of the changes in my body and aware that I had a voice and a platform on the telly. So I just thought, I think this is super important. And I've never been scared of my age. What I am really scared of is losing my vitality and my positivity and my dynamic kind of approach to who I am. This is who I didn't want people to misinterpret what I was doing and kind of to think, well, she's past a sell-by date, you know, right. And that was the conversation that was going on, particularly as someone on television. So it was a little bit scary, but I really wanted to do it. Gosh, I really wanted to do it. And then from that, you know, there's a lot of women my age group coming up through telly, and we're not ready to kind of, you know, clock out yet. We're on it. We love work. Absolutely. We love being vital. We love being honest. We love the kind of arena that we're in. And I'm not saying I was a pioneer at all. I wasn't, but I sensed a shift and I thought I want to be part of that shift. And so to be asked to do it, I was like, sign me up. Yeah, I'm on it. I love the conversation.
And what have been some of the highlights of you leading that conversation since it sort of started?
I think the highlights is generally the conversation. I would sit down like I did this morning with a group of women doing a yoga session, and the conversation is free. It's free and it's flowing and nobody is scared of it. I think before speaking about your menopause was difficult, if indeed it existed at all. And I think, let's not forget, for some women, that conversation is still difficult. But the more we hear the conversation, the more we, you know, the conversation leads to research, doesn't it? From your research, you can find your help. Mm-hmm. And from your help, you can start to explore and share ideas and understand what it's all about. So for me, as a mother of a young woman, my daughter is about to be 32. It was important. That conversation was super important. And it was not only me as a woman imparting my help or whatever to women out there. It was helping my immediate family, my daughter. We had conversations about it. With my nieces, but also importantly, Steve, with my nephews as well, with my husband, with, you know, my friends' husbands, the conversation became out there, and it gave me a lot of joy to hear, you know, men on the tube talking about menopause. You know, it became a word that people weren't always afraid of. And to me, that's an absolute joy. Do you agree, Bookie?
So you see me nodding each time you were saying. So how I frame it, so my daughter's the same age as your daughter, and she comes with me when I go out and give meetings. And it's those conversations in different communities, because, again, the conversation will look different in different communities. But it's also, I frame it, I say, let's park menopause for a moment and just talk about hormones.
Yeah,
the teens have hormones. The young ladies have hormones.
Let's talk about your endocrine system.
Let's just talk about hormones. And, you know, when I talk about lifestyle, All of those things apply to young ladies. They apply to the teens. They apply to the young ladies. They apply to the more mature women. So it's framing the conversation. And then when I talk to the men, I'm saying, you need to understand how this affects. She's not, oh, you married a lovely woman. She's not just crazy going and turning into a witch. No, but this is what's going on. This is what is going on with her.
Yeah. So it's having and that reality is very real. I mean, a lot of women will experience very difficult episodes in their marriages because, or maybe they don't necessarily understand that menopause is like, is flipping your hormones all over the place. And maybe you are grumpy. Maybe you are moody. Maybe you are depressed. Anxious. So a lot of marriages could fail. You know, there's a lot of depression that, I mean, women die because of these symptoms too. Let's not forget how super important it is. It can manifest itself in tragic ways. So some women, I mean, it's all individualized medicine. Some women will have tiny symptoms, you know, a little bit of sweating, maybe. I mean, I was incredibly anxious and I had hair loss. There's a lot of symptoms. So it's recognizing those, but some women have extreme symptoms and it is very debilitating and life threatening.
Totally.
Yeah, I think the good. everyone's nodding along with each other, which is great. So one of the things that I want to touch on, Bookie, which you sort of mentioned earlier in the show is, and in fact, you just mentioned it again a second ago, how does the attitude towards menopause, talking about menopause, engaging with the discussion differ between different communities, different locations, and how difficult is that to navigate and to try and weave into a sort of coherent, scalable strategy to help women across the country?
So I guess different with the rise in conversation across the board, different communities are recognizing the need to have the conversations within their communities. That's one of the things. The way menopause affects different communities, there are some nuances. There are data that speak to, you know, for example, Black women will experience menopause earlier. So the average UK age is 51. Black women might experience menopause around that 49.6. Asian women from, you know, South Asia, there's even a lower age. So
and do they know why that is? Is it just one of those things they seem to be tracking? Interesting.
I didn't delve down into the data to say, okay, why is the age difference? But you know, some of those facts are helpful to recognize for clinicians, but also for the women themselves, so that when things are happening, they can start to sense that could this be?
And do those lower ages basically bring perimenopause earlier as well?
Yes. So, yeah. Okay. Because invariably it will be that they're starting their symptoms earlier. So, you know, there are some certain age brackets. So sometimes when we're talking about the data, even on the National Menopause, we're thinking, do we need to be looking at these age brackets again to see, you know, because certain communities experience things differently, but at least bringing that to the fore. Certain communities, Black women, for example, they will experience more flushing. They will have more symptoms of, you know, psychological symptoms. And they might not necessarily be the ones that present at the GPs and wanting HRT.
Right.
I, for one, I'm a, my background's pharmacy. I, for one, categorically said, it's not happening. I do not want HRT.
And why was that? Because that's a very, I was going to get onto HRT, but that, seeing as you brought it up, that's a very clear position. Like, what was your personal?
My personal position was, my background's pharmacy, so I read clinical medical data all the time. And I read, I think it was by the time you are tweaking your doses, it could bring on another period. You could have breakthrough bleeding, and I did not want that. Okay. I was done with periods, end of story. and that was that. And so, yeah, I found my own natural solutions to help me manage various symptoms, because it's not all unicorns and rainbows.
Okay. And what's the current clinical advice around HRT that the NHS puts out? roughly? I'm not sure exactly what it is, but what's the kind of rough position that they take?
So HRT, obviously an HRT conversation should be had with the clinician. What we need to do is look at the benefits and the risks for the particular woman in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the conversation to be had. Have that conversation. As a woman, I would always say, read up yourself. There are fact sheets that give clear, concise information about, so that you have, when you're having the conversation, you're making an informed decision, a shared decision with your clinician about whether to go on HRT. Look at what are the routes, preferred routes of administration that will fit with your lifestyle. And also always have the conversation with your doctor. They should be having the conversation around what are the lifestyle modifications that you would be involved with to support HRT. Because I say HRT on its own is not a panacea. You always need to underpin that. Pardon?
Oh, sorry, carry on, sorry.
You would always need to underpin that with definitely putting all the lifestyle pillars in place.
What are some of those lifestyle pillars?
So we're looking at what's the nutrition? Activity. Linda talked about walking. I say all the time, walking is the best form of exercise.
Yeah. It's so true. I think, I mean, HRT is really only part of the story, isn't it? It's what, and if women do choose to go on HRT, it's what you do with it. It's what your exercise looks like, Bookie, isn't it? It's what your diet looks like. I mean, there's no point like going HRT, HRT, HRT if you're smoking or you're drinking or you're not taking exercise. I mean, it's the whole deal. And you have to, you're kind of building a blanket for yourself. Your blanket is yours to build, and it will support you and nourish you. But you have to be kind to yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to understand your body, recognize it. Mm-hmm. I kind of sometimes talk to my body as if it was someone else, like, what do you need? Mm-hmm. And my body will go, take me up that flipping mountain. I want to go. I want to be in the air. I want to breathe. I want to burst out of my skin sometime. I remember this feeling of like, I need to just like shrug my skin off and just, my body needs to go somewhere else. You know, all these things, it's important to recognize your symptoms, understand what your body needs, but importantly to nourish it, nourish your mind, which is why so many, a lot of women take up yoga in their youth, but particularly at a midlife age, yoga is so good for your mind, your meditation. What does your meditation look like? It could look like you're sitting on your own, just being still. But and the science behind meditation is phenomenal. So, you know, I urge women to look at that, to look at how they do their yoga practice. I mean, always choose yoga. You know what I mean? It's like maybe ditch your running shoes, but sit on your yoga mat. So what your blanket, your emotional blanket looks like to you. For me, it's exercise. And that was my savior, was my exercise. I mean, luckily, I was a woman that wasn't afraid of exercise. But when I was in my late 40s, it looked stronger and it made me have a stronger body, a stronger mind, a stronger attitude. And that vitality that we talk about, that vibrancy. You've got a plaque behind your bookie on your bookshelves. Does it say vibrancy? Vibrancy in midlife. That will stand any woman in good stead, but particularly at this midlife point of our lives.
And is that part of your philosophy as well, Bookie, with this vibrancy, this energy?
So Vibrant Midlife is a wellness practice. It's the organization I launched when I started this work, before I even got to the NHS. And why did I choose Vibrant Midlife as a name? It was because if you Google midlife, what you come up with is midlife crisis. And I'm like, no, I'm not subscribing to that negative narrative of this phase of life. And I thought, okay, so what do I, so anyway, we came up with Vibrant Midlife. So that's that. In terms of just adding to what Linda said about lifestyle, is that also lifestyle can be accompanied by medication. But what we also need to do is we need to recognize that we give ourselves grace, bring in things gradually. If you might not be able to run 10 or walk 10K or 5K or whatever, but build things up and also get support, because sometimes lifestyle change can be difficult on when one is alone. Look at things like stress as well. How do we manage? You know, some things we need to leave out of our lives at a certain point, because we find that a midlife woman is in the sandwich generation. She's probably got kids at home, got elderly parents, got all of these. She's at her peak of her career.
Yeah, got work, got career.
I think you know, if you're in a good mindset and you can mm-hmm. manage your symptoms and nothing is too overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I think to be able to see it as an opportunity is a really good message. It's if you can view it that, if you can kind of think, I'm not going to get bogged down with the sweating, with the anxiety, with the stress, with the, you know, the falling out hair, the dry skin. Take a step back, view it as an opportunity. I think it really would help you to go forward. And I think many women, if they can adopt that very positive framework, it would help enormously. It did. It certainly did for me.
That is so key, Linda. Mindset. I have something I call navigating menopause. We call it MAPS. I got an acronym, but I'll share that with you at some other time.
Thank you.
Well, look, I think that's a good place to stop for our second commercial break.
The station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's very special show on menopause with my guests, Bukki Ayoade and Linda Barker. So I want to touch on something that we've sort of skirted around a little bit or talked about a little bit, which is this idea that on the one side, and this is a quote from a Panorama special that went out earlier this week on menopause, that women, quote, are drowning in information, and it's not more information that they need. It's the right information and how women can find the right information and be able to determine the wrong information from the right information, if that's even possible, because it might actually be that some information is right for some women and some information is right for other women. So how would you kind of, Linda, do you want to sort of take that one on to start with? What's your view on this whole area?
I think it's difficult. I think it's where we kind of started at the beginning of the show. Information is key. Conversation is important because that allows us to be informed and make our own decisions. It is a tricky one, isn't it? Because the HRT conversation is very loud, and certainly for me, I've been on it for a little bit of my time, my perimenopausal years, and then I came off it for some clinical research that was done on my DNA. Actually, it wasn't the right thing for me, so I immediately stopped. But I think the conversation around HRT is, if you're not on it, maybe you should be. You know, and I find that very difficult because right. I've got sisters that aren't on it who look vital and energetic and are really strong, and I look up to them. And there are a lot of women similarly that choose not to be on it, but equally, you know, it's a conversation that a lot of women have, and they, you know, and they go, well, why wouldn't I want my hormones back? You know, my skin feels great. My hair looks great. You know, and who doesn't want that as a woman? You know, we want, this is only, we're not at the end of our lives where we're sort of, you know, we've got many years ahead of us. Unlike, you know, our grandparents before us who saw it as a kind of winding down. We just see it as the kind of an interrupter. And we want to be strong and, importantly, well recognized, and we want that response in a work environment, in your social environment. So for me, I still think it's quite a confusing place. And you would like to think that the more communication there is out there, the more that is written about it, the more is talked about it, the easier it becomes. And I think that is not necessarily the case. And I find it a tricky arena.
Where have you gone to find information that works for you?
Well, I go to the bookshelves. I go to a good bookshop, and I'll look for, across that whole section. I look if there's a magazine on the shelves and it's mentioned the menopause or midlife or whatever it is. It's like that's me speaking to me. I'll take it. I'll read it. I'll talk to colleagues, I'll talk to women, I'll talk to sisters, I'll talk to friends. So that's all I've got, really. That's all right. That's my toolkit. So that is the toolkit that I've got.
Bookie, what's your view on this? Because you mentioned earlier in the show that you have a sort of a go-to list or a hit list, so to speak, of sources that you refer to. I think you're on mute, by the way, before you start to talk, just before you, there we go. So what's your recommendation of safe, accurate, but still compelling places to go for women to get support, informational support?
Okay, so I would say to your question about HRT, HRT does have its place in menopause care. We've established that, we know that. So I would always recommend women to go to somewhere called the Women's Health Concern, which is the patient arm of the British Menopause Society.
Okay, Women's Health Concern.
Women's Health Concern is one source that I would recommend. They have a whole range of fact sheets that speak to different aspects around menopause. The other area I would say to go to is it's a website called Rock My Menopause. So this is a group of primary care clinicians who are involved in women's health.
Okay. It's actually, are they like the special forces of women's health in primary care?
It's called the Primary Care Women's Health Forum. Okay. But Rock My Menopause is a really funky website, so I like it. I like to recommend that. I would also recommend menopausesupport.co.uk. I hope I've said that correctly.
Okay.
menopausesupport.co.uk, because Diane Danzelbreek, she's one of the foremost menopause campaigners like yourself, Linda. She's campaigned to get menopause menopause on the curriculum. She's produced an amazing booklet called Understanding Menopause. I wish I had it here to show you. And I use that when I go out in workshops. I just order the booklets and take, because it's presented, it's evidence-based, but presented in a very easy-to-read format for women as a good starting point. So those are, I'll stop at three. There are more, but I'll just stop at those three.
And we'll put them in the, we'll put them on the socials afterwards, just in case anyone wants to get them.
Perfect.
What's your view about, like, the elephant in the room here a little bit around social media? And this area, because, you know, I had a very quick look. I just did menopause in Instagram earlier in the search bar, and there's a lot, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, good, bad, somewhere in the middle, we're not sure. Like, what's your kind of personal view on that stuff?
Linda, I'll let you go.
we're slightly flabbergasted because I think what Bookie has just said in that previous little chat, you know, those three little nuggets of information, I've written them down, Bookie, and that's exactly where I'll be going to. And I think this is key. Social media is wide open, isn't it? And you can be running down rabbit holes. And you can get completely lost and caught up in all sorts of misinformation. Nothing there is kind of regulated. What Bookie has said, that to me resonates. We need to look at people that know their craft. You know, Bookie knows her stuff. You guys know your stuff. This is where the important information comes from. And let that be your rabbit hole. For me, that's important because it's science-based. It's women that care. It's women that are driving, well, not always women, professionals that are looking after us for all the right reasons. So that's where I would go. And I can't wait to see that list at the end on your show notes.
I need you for 8 more minutes, Linda. You can't go.
I better plug the NHS self-care fact sheet. There's one there as well. So there's a menopause self-care fact sheet produced by the NHS. That's there. And obviously our website. Social media, it has its advantages in that obviously it broadens the conversation. But to what extent, what is the quality of the conversation? There are some great clinicians that are doing good advocacy work on social media.
Yeah.
There are other conversations that lead down. There are some that cherry pick data to back up what it is they're saying. So you need to be savvy. And to Linda's point, not everybody can sift through this. So you need to be clear and conscious about the voices that you listen to in this space.
Do you know what, Steve? Sorry to interrupt. I went to the theatre last night, you know, for entertainment. And entertainment I got, you know, I would love to see. Do you remember when there was a play called The Vagina Monologues that was on stage?
Yeah.
And how revolutionary that was at the time. Wouldn't it be great if we could go to a local theatre or a village hall and have, you know, a group of professionals talking about this, delivering important science-based, evidence-based information literally at the end of your road? That to me would be sensational. That to me, because I do think we need that personal approach. I do like to hear the spoken word. I like to hear one's woman's approach, what they've done, their symptoms, their resolution, and how they got to that. I love that. And when you get a group of women together to talk about it, that is power. That's what I'd like to see on a London stage or in a village hall up in West Yorkshire.
Do you know, it's on its way, Linda.
What is it? What's happening? What's coming?
So there are a group of academics, come clinicians at UCL who are putting together, what they're trying to put together is what is called a National Education Menopause Education Program. And the thinking around it is around, you know, having cafes and having, and there are menopause cafes out there as well at the moment anyway. But that program started building from last year and it's gaining a lot of momentum. And it's the thinking is it's going to be similar to the NCT program in pregnancy. That's the kind of thing that's coming down.
There you go. If that model can land, that would be amazing. And that's something that the team in West Yorkshire are also launching in October is menopause cafes.
They are happening up and down the country. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And I think that type of war. I mean, Bookie, would you say that sort of stuff is almost like in the social prescribing space, the sort of like community solving the community's problems kind of thing?
Yeah, but I think they're coming at it from different angles. They're coming at it from the evidence base. They're coming at it from intersectionality. Coming at it from underserved communities. So it's a whole, and they are taking a lot of, you know, having a lot of focus groups. So bringing in a lot of different, and I have people, you know, want to speak with me all the time and say, oh, we are doing this. I said, why don't you speak with Joyce? Because Joyce is one of the head. And yeah. Why don't you speak with Joyce and see how you can input whatever it is your interest is in Menopause into this bigger thing that will serve more people.
Well, that's what they're doing in West Yorkshire, actually. And PocDoc's lucky enough to be part of it, where at the menopause cafes and at these menopause interactions, there will be also cardiovascular screening. So in the interest of making every contact count, if you're not there, then why not try and sort of get the best and the most comprehensive health experience at the same time? And particularly when you're going into communities that are traditionally considered to be underserved or have elements of inequality of access, it just makes everything more efficient, and it puts everything in the same place, and it means you can have all those conversations at the same time.
I think that's super important. I had no idea about that. So that's incredible information. And I just kind of the last kind of point I want to make is, like, not every woman has a voice. Not everybody wants to talk. Some people might just want to sit back and listen. Mm-hmm. And they are super relevant too. Not everybody needs to kind of, you know, bang on about this. Some of us do, and that's great. But importantly, those venues, I mean, I'm preaching to the already, though, you know it, but those venues allow someone to sit back, to sit on a table away from, you know, the conversation, but importantly, hear the conversation, and that will help. It just helps everybody. It helps the you know, those that vocalize everything, and those that really recede and just are quite timid and quiet.
Bookie, so we've got a couple of minutes left. Linda, you said that your vision, if you like, was to see a sort of theatre production being openly about menopause at the end of your road or in some village hall in West Yorkshire, or sorry, in Yorkshire. But Bookie, what's your kind of vision, like where like in 5 years or 10 years, where do you want this conversation to be, do you think?
I would want it to be that a woman can walk into her GP practice with the men, with a GP practice or primary care setting with men with experiencing symptoms picked up by the clinician straight away, and not have to wait too long to get access to the care that she needs.
Perfect. I think that's an incredible goal, and hopefully it will happen quicker than 5 to 10 years time. So fingers crossed, but I know that you and Linda and others are working really hard to deliver on that goal, and including the amazing team at York and Humber Health Innovation Network. So that's the end of the show. Thank you so much to both of you for coming on.
Thank you.
And thanks for the great discussion. Everyone listening, really appreciate you tuning in, and we'll be back again next week with another show.